The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 983. It's the 2nd of February, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Keith Alone, CEO of Powerhouse Energy, that's PHE, and Keith explains why they recently issued shares early to settle the Hillgrave Investments convertible loan note. It also talks about progress at the company. Plus, I also have Carl Smithson, CEO of Stellar Diamonds, STEL. Very popular stock yesterday, as Carl discusses the possible share offer by Newfield Resources and the $3 million loan. That's dollar loan, by the way. Also on the podcast, Marcus Edwards Jones, Executive Chairman, and Dennis Thomas, CEO of Phoenix Global Mining, discuss their recent exploration update and also explain why some of the directors are buying shares. Plus, it's a Friday, so Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Nichols, it's NICL, Traxys, TRCS, and Blue Jay Mining, that is J-A-Y. Also, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Keith Alone, CEO of Powerhouse Energy Group. That's PHE. Keith, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be here. And I think this is the first call that we've had when I'm actually a resident of the UK. Actually, my wife and I are moving into our flat in Chester this very afternoon, and we're excited to be here for the next few years to drive the company forward.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the UK, Keith. And
Thank you.
Next thing you know, you'll be losing that accent and having a very clipped, received pronunciation soon. So
exactly.
All right. Well, Keith, before we get into the announcement of late, explain to people not aware of Powerhouse Energy, what do you do?
Powerhouse Energy is the pioneer in developing waste to hydrogen solutions in the waste to energy market. We've developed a novel concept known as DMG, which is distributed modular gasification, which allows us in a small footprint to deliver over a megawatt of electricity and over a ton of road fuel quality hydrogen from a single unit. And that single unit has a small footprint. It can be located just about anywhere. And we feel that by being able to bring the solution to where the problem is, that this is is going to be rapidly adopted by councils and industry, and it is going to be very disruptive of the waste diversion, waste eradication movement.
Excellent stuff. And of course, it's a massive movement, isn't it, around the world, people trying to eradicate this diesel and petrol. So let's go into this recent announcement, because it's an issue of equity. And take us about the background behind this convertible loan, please, and Keith, and what's happened
recently. Of course. So literally keeping the company alive 5 years ago, Hillgrove Investments Pty Limited out of Australia, which had been an early investor in Powerhouse, agreed to step in and eliminate previous management and to fund the company until the company could get back on its feet with a wholly new technology. And so in the ensuing number of years, the only mechanism by which Powerhouse was staying afloat and paying its bills was through Hillgrove Investments. Mm-hmm. Now, last year we made the decision that, and that note carried with it a 15% per annum interest charge, and it was getting to the point that we were accruing £500,000 per year in interest. So it made sense for us to get out from under that note as quickly as we could. And last year we We raised about £2.5 million to pay Hillgrove out from under that note, and to convert for Hillgrove to convert the rest of that note into equity, which was non-interest bearing, mm-hmm. and which they had voluntarily agreed to lock in for 12 months. Mm-hmm. So truly, Hillgrove has been kind of a knight in shining armor to the company, and the company would not exist today had it not been for them. That said, from a business perspective, it was definitely time for the company to stand on its own feet, own two feet, and move forward. And with the delivery of the G3 unit and the advent of the DMG technology and system, we were prepared to do that. So the date was rapidly approaching. February 14th would be the date that we needed to deliver the nearly 300 million shares that were effectively in escrow for Hillgrove. Mm-hmm. And we recognize that the share price has been declining over the last couple of months. And I think that that's predominantly because people who were aware of the fact that nearly 300 million shares were going to be coming on market February 14th, were proactively getting out of the market. And as you know, on the AIM, downward pressure on small company stocks is significantly higher in a sell than upward pressure is on a buy. So we're now at in a position where we realize that we could place a large portion, 75% of these shares with various institutional investors and private investors. And so working with Turner Pope over the last week or so, we've gotten that done. And it's been kind of like pulling off a Band-Aid. It stings for a minute. But the important thing is that had those shares been left to another party, they would have been dribbled out over time. And our chairman had had an example of this exact thing, where every time they had good news, somebody who had a large shareholding was selling into that news, mm-hmm. and was depressing the share price literally for years. And so with the, again, nearly 300 million shares that Hillgrove held, we felt that we'd be looking at a year or two of a depressed share price if we were not able to assist in placing those shares and, again, pulling the Band-Aid off and allowing us to move forward. So really what this allows us to do is to move forward in a very unencumbered way. The relatively small number of additional shares that Hillgrove holds, we actually are in control of, and they've agreed to an additional 6-month lockup for that. And so I think that the good news, that much of the news that will be forthcoming is going to be perceived positively by the market, and we're going to start seeing that upward pressure again and some of the reinvigoration of the PHE stock. So, my belief is that there's been no better time to acquire PHE stock than now. Mm-hmm. And we're literally on the cusp of beginning to deliver what we've been promising over the past year, which is a commercially operating facility by the end of 2018. This past week, we began in earnest with our partners in the Northwest, with our planning and permitting team, building out our approach to the planning and permitting process, looking at the site, looking at the civils that are necessary for the site. And I would say that that we hopefully will be getting going on site civils within the next few months. So it's a very positive time. Engineering is moving forward very aggressively. February is going to be an exciting month. We're going to be doing a number of things with the demonstrator unit in Thornton, and we're going to we're going to be engaged really in daily testing on various feedstocks that we have identified as our target feedstocks for the commercial unit.
Excellent.
So it's an exciting time to be involved.
Excellent. So obviously, and that ties in, I suppose, because you have some positive news coming out. You wanted to get that sort of corporate action out of the way. All right, Keith, well, listen,
exactly. You're
in an exciting sort of position here. And like I say, it's a turnaround here. And the fact that you've moved over here from the US to the UK says a lot, I think. So listen, three quick reasons. If someone's not following this story of Powerhouse Energy, give them three reasons why they should hit that button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure, Justin. So people absolutely should add us to their page, predominantly because, again, we're the pioneer in delivering hydrogen from waste solutions, and that hydrogen can be used as a high-quality road fuel, can displace carbon-based fuels and have a significant difference. Additionally, our process eradicates plastic from the waste stream. We can take any plastic source and feed that through our ultra-high temperature gasifier and generate an energy-rich synthesis gas from which we can create hydrogen and create electricity-distributed private wire electricity. And more importantly, we're on the cusp of the J curve, as I've said before, of beginning to deliver on the commercial realities of the Powerhouse story. And so now is the time to really jump on board, because things are going to start accelerating and happening more rapidly than they ever have.
Excellent stuff. Well, Keith, listen, when these things do start to unravel and you start releasing these bits of news, don't forget to come on the podcast and chat to us about it. Thanks so very much for talking to us.
I'll be back, Justin, hopefully sooner than later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Carl Smithson, CEO of Stellar Diamonds. That's STEL. Carl, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Pleasure as always. Morning, Justin.
And I got to say, you were the talk of the small cap sort of sector yesterday on social media. You were the one that everyone was buzzing about, and it was about the possible offer of the company and proposed loan. And we'll go into that in a bit. But before we do all that, for people not aware of Stellar, and they maybe, if they weren't before yesterday and then the small cap space, they certainly would have heard of you after yesterday. But just explain what you do, please, Carl.
Okay, well, Stellar, as some of your listeners would know, is a diamond exploration company focused on a project in Sierra Leone called Tongo Tonguma, where we've combined two adjacent assets to basically put on the table a resource of initial resource that is of 4.5 million carats of very high grade, high value diamonds. And, we've been looking for the funding to bring this into production.
Yeah, and I wrote a blog on you, and I was very interested because at the time, when your share price was like 3.15 pence, it was something, your NPV was ridiculous. It was 40 times your current market capitalization. So, hoping to achieve, like I said, 45 million gross revenue per annum. And so I thought, wow, if they get this away, it's going to be a phenomenal shoot up in the share price. But so this news came out, which is very exciting. So it's the possible share offer by Newfield Resources and a $3 million loan. So explain this deal, Carl, because it's a lot in there to digest,
There is a lot in this, and just in a nutshell, basically, Newfield are an Australian company. They also have diamond assets in Sierra Leone, and we got to talking towards the end of last year about, maybe combining our respective assets, and we decided the best way to do this was through an all-share merger, and Newfield basically have some very strong and very supportive shareholders, and the deal is basically that we swap our shares with Newfield shares. Our shareholders become 16.4% of the enlarged Newfields after their funding rounds, which basically bring in 40 million Australian dollars to develop our Tonguma project. And I think the real good thing here for Stellar shareholders is that this has been done at a substantial premium to what was our share price yesterday morning before the announcement, like over 400% premium. And it's a fantastic deal for Stellar. And I dare say it's a fantastic deal for Newfield because, they're obviously getting access to the project that you've mentioned now, which has, a very long-term life of mine, very good revenues, and, very high NPV.
Yeah, and so going forward, what's next then, Carl, here? What happens?
Yeah, well, we've done what we call a 2.4 announcement, which is the indicative offer. And basically, we're now working on the what would be the final binding offer. And, you know, there's a couple of subject twos on this. And one is obviously Newfields bringing in the required funding for this, and obviously their shareholder approvals and Stella's shareholder approvals. And this is a process now that's going to take perhaps upwards of 2 months. It's called a scheme of arrangement, has to go through a court process. And, you know, that then obviously subject to all of that working out, the deal is done.
Okay, I understand. So this deal, breaking it down, so how does it value Stella then, Carl?
Yeah, well, on a fully diluted basis, you know, we've calculated the share swap ratio, 0.76 Newfield share for one Stella share, and it's at Newfield's current price. It values Stella at just under 10p per share. And, you know, we started trading yesterday at 2.3, currently at 5.75. So, you know, there's certainly some upside left in it based on the ratio.
Yeah, and it's probably worth, like you say, going over again the project, because, of course, we all know, you know, that area, and we've heard lots of stories of late of massive diamonds coming out of there, because it's quite a prolific area, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sierra Leone has always been a large stone, high quality stone producer. It's got some of the best diamonds in the world. More recently, last year, I think there was a 700 carat stone, there's a 400 carat stone. You know, good signs that you know, it's a place to be for diamonds. And you know, the Tongo Tonguma project, basically the two licenses cover the whole of that Tongo diamond region. So you know, we're in a very strong controlling position of a fantastic area that, as I say, is going to give long-term production.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, you've posted on Fox a couple of these diamond discoveries of late. What was the last one with quite a big find there? How big was that?
Yeah, that was 470 carats, I think it was, and it sold for about $15 million. Fantastic.
That's mad, isn't it? I mean, it's no way of knowing if you'll ever come across that, but, you know, what are the, I mean, do you ever factor that into your modelling or what?
No, you can't. They're the cherry on the cake, of course. What we do is we factor in the run of mine. So, you know, we've got very good handle on what our run of mine dollar per carat will be and the grades of that, of course. Anything sort of big and beautiful like that goes straight down to the bottom line.
Yeah, excellent stuff. All right, Carl, it's very exciting. And, I mean, what's your feeling on this? I mean, you're quite excited about this now, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been looking for the funding for the best part of a year for this project. And I think this is a great solution because we bring the funding in at a premium for our shareholders, not a discount. Mm-hmm. And as you know, if we were $2 million market cap. You were looking to bring in $30 million of development capital. If we'd have done it in the, say, London market, let's say, our shareholders would have been crushed out of sight.
Yeah.
Whereas this way, you know, they're retaining 16.5% of what will be a fully funded company and a project funded into production. I think it's a great deal.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, Carl, well, listen, you know, right now you're still there on Vox, and there's a big follow button on your page, and so if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of this but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, based on the deal, this values Stella's shares on a fully diluted basis of just under 10p per share. And I think we're currently trading now at just like five and three quarters after yesterday's run-up. So there's still a long way to go as I see it. And certainly, I think, you know, this is going to be a very profitable, let's say, project for both Stella and Newfields once this is into production. And I think, as you said, the economics of this project really stack up. So that's going to be great to watch for the future. And just on the outlook on diamonds itself as a commodity, it's got some great dynamics in terms of pricing. So really good commodity to be in and to be following.
Excellent stuff, Carl. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, we'll keep you updated. Thanks a lot, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Marcus Edward Jones, Executive Chairman, and Dennis Thomas, CEO of Phoenix Global Holdings. That's PGM ticker, or should I say, Phoenix Global Mining, I should say. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, Marcus, we spoke recently. Dennis, we spoke a bit further back. But even though we spoke recently, you've had two bits of news out since we last spoke. So you're obviously a very active company. We'll get to those bits of news in a bit. Before we do, as always, Dennis, for people listening and they're not familiar with Phoenix Global Mining, could you explain what you're all about, please?
Yes, Justin. Phoenix Global Mining is a US-focused base and precious metal explorer and developer. And we're fast-tracking at the moment the historically producing Empire mine in Idaho back into production. We've recently confirmed an increase in the ore resources in our oxide deposit. And we're also having a two-phase strategy, basically looking at the oxides and the sulfides below. We've also acquired two groups of claims as well on the cobalt belt in Idaho, the Idaho cobalt belt, and we'll be looking to be drilling those later on this year when the drilling season begins.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go to the last bit of news, and it's always a positive when we see one of these RNSs pop up, and it's entitled Director's Dealings. I suppose, Marcus, you could take us through this because you're involved.
Yes. Well, we have got quite a bit of skin in the game, and I don't have as many shares as some of the other directors do. And just from a timing point of view, it's always very difficult to time one's purchases with all the rules about closed periods and things. And we had a brief opportunity where we're allowed to deal in the shares. Looking at the tax reductions by the Republican government, that has on the back of an envelope calculation around $50 million to our net profit over the 10-year life, the anticipated 10-year life of the mine, which is more than three times our market capitalization. So I did think that we our shares were significantly undervalued, so I added to my holding, and it's a great vote of confidence to see Ryan McDermott, our local MD, buying a substantial holding in the shares.
Yeah, because I said you're not the only one there buying shares, so that's you know, always good to see that. That's what, you know, as an investor, because I'm an investor as well, that's why I started this podcast, because I love investing. And that's one of the things I always look at, you know, when investing in a company. Do the management and directors have skin in the game? So I'm thinking, if they're not prepared to risk their capital, then, you know, why should I, essentially? But so it's always a good sign there. All right, so let's move on to the exploration update. And this was Dennis, over to you for this, and take us through this, if you could, please.
Yes, it's often difficult trying to explain what particularly at the beginning of the looking at this is very much exploration now. As you know, we've got the oxides on the surface. Basically, the Empire Mine ore body was originally a very large sulfide body hosted in what we call a skarn structure, which is a metamorphosed rock. Anyway, the top portion of that ore body weathered with to about 100, 120 meters, forming an oxide cap. And it's into that oxide cap that some more than 300 holes have been put, and that is where our present 19.4 million tons of resources reside. But amazingly, in the life of this mine, nobody has ever put any holes or done any exploration work into the underlying sulfides, which are considerable. So the top of an ore body that we know is at least at least 500 meters to the bottom level, only the first 120 meters have been explored there is no empirical evidence in the form of actual samples from within the sulfide zone. So basically, we put two holes, these two initial holes we refer to as scout holes. Mm-hmm. And you could really better call them as reconnaissance holes. So this is the first poke into the sulfides, for want of a better word. And we're delighted to say that, in fact, both holes have been in skarn mineralization through most of the length of the holes, and also been returning mineral values, some of which was described by John Mayer and Simon Beardsmore in the SPA SP Angel Morning View as mineable tenor. It's there in both holes. And we've got the presence not only of copper, but also the other metals, gold, silver, zinc, and very excitingly, tungsten is starting to show, which is what we predicted at depth. Mm-hmm. So this is a very exciting development. At this stage, the old ore body, you have to remember the mine was worked by underground narrow vein mining techniques back between 1901 and 1942, mostly in sulfides and down to approximately 300 or 400 meters below the top surface level. And the miners only operated with candles, and therefore visibility in such conditions was pretty bad, which meant that the ore grade had to be very high. One of the things that we doing in our drilling was to try and miss these high-grade zones for the simple reason there are voids there and we lose the core. So basically these holes are looking down at depth. We were looking for structure, as I think I may have mentioned in a previous podcast. That's our intention. And the structure, in fact, is what the skarn structure is, in fact, what hosts the mineralization. So we're looking for structure, and that we've found.
Okay, so, I mean, as far as you're concerned, everything there was as expected, because some people, I think, misinterpreted that exploration as looking for grade rather than structure. Is that right?
That's correct, Justin. Basically, as I said earlier on, the skarn, in fact, hosts the ore. And so what we're looking for is structure, and to understand the structure. Skarns are complicated structures generally. They're metamorphic structures, they're altered structures. Mm-hmm. And we have four different types of skarn within the Empire system. So these holes that have gone down have, in fact, we've encountered all four types of skarn. And not only that, the bonus, as far as we're concerned, is that they've been mineralized from most of the way down, and some of it, in fact, at ore grade. But also, we're seeing tungsten coming into the system deeper down, which is what basically our consulting geologist has predicted, which is particularly exciting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent stuff. And just to put it in people's heads, Dennis, now, as far as the timeline is concerned and next few milestones, what can people expect?
Well, as far as the sulfides are concerned, this is an excellent harbinger, really. This is giving us important information for our next step as far as the sulfides are concerned. We are, as you know, attempting to reopen some of the old workings, and we're in the process at the moment of getting permission from the mine's health and safety people to go underground, and that we are waiting for. If we can get into the ore body, that would be first prize, but reopening old mines is never simple. However, we'll be drilling that. We are now, after the success of our drilling campaign and the oxides, we're basically looking at an economic analysis of the options open to us as far as metallurgical treatment is concerned. So we're moving towards putting plans together for an open pit, and moving towards next year, particularly for a bankable feasibility study with a view to obviously getting into production. Yeah. With the mine. And of course, then we've got our cobalt exploration program, which we will be looking to move forward later on in the year.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well,
and in the meantime, yeah, we're very much looking forward to increasing our profile with North American investors. Mm-hmm. We'll be spending a lot more time roadshowing the company over there.
Yeah.
And
yes, we're getting a lot of interest, and particularly, the whole tenor of enthusiasm for investment in the USA is increasing exponentially. And I think particularly if we do find tungsten at depth in this mine strategically, it's a very important thing for the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people are well aware these days of the potential of these metals, with the EV revolution happening. Okay, listen, guys, so if someone's listening to this and like the sound of what you're doing and where you're at, but are not yet following the story, then please give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I'll come in on this and just say I'll carry on with my mantra. I think the one that we've had before. We're achieving what we set out to do, which is to move the project forward into the ultimate production of 7,000 tons of copper cathode per annum, and we're on track with everything. So I would state simply that we're in the right commodities. Copper, cobalt, gold, silver, and with the mouth-watering possibility of economic tungsten in the lower reaches of the sulfide system. Number two, we're at the right time. Copper and cobalt particularly becoming very strategic now. And number three, we're certainly in the right location. And I believe there's no better place in the world, in my opinion, than Idaho to be working at the moment.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Guys, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yeah, any good plans for the weekend?
Not a lot on this occasion, I'm delighted to say, which is lovely. I've had a very busy week, so I'm looking forward to chilling out and just actually seeing something of my lovely lady wife and kids, because I've barely seen them this week. So that will be quite... Although my daughter's got a sleepover tonight, having said that, so I won't see you then either. But
oh, yeah,
that's the match. So it'll be a bit of swimming, taking the kids to the cycle track, and then my son to cricket nets on Sunday evenings, about the extent. Other than that, I'm quite looking forward to reading the paper, actually, and just having a chill out.
Yeah,
I would, if it was on earlier, watch the Super Bowl, but it doesn't kick off till about 11:30, so that's a bit late for me.
Yeah,
so.
are you into that? Or
massively into it. I think it is chess on grass. I absolutely love it. Yeah,
I don't know if that's a selling point, though, is
loads
it?
Loads of people find... loads of people find it staggeringly boring. I can understand why, because it's very complicated. And I must admit, the video replay stuff does my head in, which I know is a big bone of contention in football over here now. Believe me, it isn't going to get any better, everybody. It's always going to be this slow, looking at what happens in the States. So,
yeah.
I do find it fascinating. I know that the ratings are down in the US right now, partly because the players are now so colossally well paid, there's a bit of a disconnect there, but yeah, also partly because the New England Patriots, I think, reached their 8th Super Bowl in 15 years, which in America is, I mean, it's virtually unheard of. So A, it tells you how brilliant they are, but B, the American system is designed to make it as hard as possible for people to keep on winning, and it's clearly taking its toll, partly because they're not a very popular team. They seem to be, you know, they seem to push things a little bit in terms of the rules. There's been Spygate, Deflategate, when they're fiddling with the pressure in the balls, allegedly. And so they're not the most popular team, even if you have to fully respect what they're doing on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? Just one thing on this video replay and video referee. And I think in rugby, they got it right. They share it with the crowd, and it's a bit of drama.
Yep.
It's a moment of drama.
Rugby league, yeah.
We can
exactly
all join in, and we can all, you know, and they slow the ball down. If it's like a try or something, they're contesting, they slow it down, and you know, everyone's going, oh,
yeah.
And it's part of the game. But now in football, it's like in the privacy of a little screen, isn't it? And
no.
Share it. It's part of the game. That's the whole thing.
The NFL, they show the same replays that the referee seeing on the big screen. You can hear the crowd cheering or booing and getting that,
exactly.
But it does slow the game down.
It does. But you know what? It's not a break in the game. It's almost part of it. And to take that. And I think if it doesn't work in football, the reason why it doesn't work is because you're basically removing the crowd from the game for a couple of minutes. Don't remove them from the game. Let them see it. Let them see the adjudication, the judges, or you know why they've made the decision. And I just think why they've changed it. It works in rugby. I find it's fine. Yeah, but anyway, let's get on to something.
Right, anyway, yes.
We may know a little bit or less about, but who knows? Stocks and shares.
Time will tell.
Yeah. Stocks and shares. So, what are we looking at first and foremost?
We're looking at Nichols, Traxys, and Blue Jay Mining.
Okay, let's go. Start with Nichols then.
Yeah, no. Well, Nichols is not one that we've done together. NICL, AIM quoted, based in Newton La Willow, so one of Warrington's finest. About a $550 million market cap. And, you know, there's the debate going on right now. Do you want to be in value? Do you want to be in income? Do you want to be in quality? Or do you want to be in growth? And that's, as much as anything, a matter of personal style. You know, trying to time the market, as we know, is the devil's work. And you'll find something that works for you and suits your appetite for risk, your time horizon, your target returns. And so it'll be a matter of horses for courses. But, you know, quality has done very well for the past few years. Growth has done very well. It'd be interesting to see value makes a comeback. But over time, generally, quality is where you want to be. So as long, you know, has been a proven method, should we say. It doesn't always work, but over time, so long as obviously you pay a sensible price. And I think you look at Nichols, it's a really interesting example. 20% operating margin, 35% return on capital. It's got a net cash balance sheet with good cash conversion. And just so you, in case anybody doesn't know what it does, it makes Vimto. It makes fizzy drinks and soft drinks. Okay. And, you know, so that's what it does. And you think, but it's got brands, and brands bring pricing power as long as they don't push it too hard. It's got a consistent record of cash flow, earnings growth, and dividends growth. Now, what's interesting is the stock's just gone from just under 20 quid to 14 in the last 6 months, 8 months. Mm-hmm. Two reasons. One, the sugar tax is coming in April, introduced by then Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, I think. That's coming up. And that's clearly made people worry about, you know, will demand for Vimto and some of their other drinks drop off, or will they be penalised by the levy? And also, they've had a bit of a hiccup in Yemen, of all places, where their Middle Eastern trade has been hit. Now, we know Yemen is not a happy country and has not been a happy country for some time. It's riven with civil war, mm-hmm. and they've been having difficulty getting supplies through, which under the circumstances is perhaps no great surprise. So a rare disappointing trading update from the company just before Christmas because of the Middle East. Stock got clonked. So that's brought it back to a PE just in the low 20s, the lowest it's been for quite a long time. Dividend yield of 2%. So for value hunters, you're just going to think, I'm really sorry, it doesn't really do it for me. But for long-term, for companies with high returns on capital, they can use that money that they generate to reinvest, build their brands, defend their brands, and keep the margins going. And I think it's one of those that after a big pullback, if you are a quality hunter, it's probably one of the times you think, yeah, I'll take my chances. There could be more upset in the Middle East. We don't know what the sugar levy is going to mean. But all of their drinks like Vimto and Feel Good already are under the sugar levy threshold. They've had plenty of time to prepare for this, and prepared they are. There's also an African growth story in there as well. So for the patient portfolio builder, this on the face of it, you know, as long as the Middle East and things don't catch up with them again, looks to be a decent time to have a look at it.
Yeah, do you know what? I'd say just from a charting point of view, do you know what? It did a double top at £19.50, like I said, back in sort of July and March. And now it came down to that sort of £14 mark, and it's done a bit of a V-shaped bounce. Now, V-shaped bounces aren't very sturdy, you know? I mean, you want to see it come down again, at least test that low again to make sure it's not going to go any lower, and then maybe...
If it did, I think we'd probably run for the hills.
yeah, exactly. But if it holds, then you're looking... Yes. It's looking to find a new level here, you know, to build off of, and it hasn't really found it yet. So it needs to test that £14 again, I'd say, or close to, before thinking about getting in
charge. Chart-wise.
What else have we got there then?
Traxys is one that we've looked at before. Yeah. Leeds-based company, TRCS, AIM quoted, just under 150 million market cap. We first looked at it last April when it was at 430-odd p. It's now at 530-odd p, so it's up by 20%, which is quite nice. And we last looked at it at the time of the full-year results in November, which were fine. And the company's just announced it's made three acquisitions, one of which is actually the holding company for the other two. So what it's really bought is two companies, one called Travel Compensation, which is processes rail delay claims, and one of which is called Delay Repair Sniper, which is a web portal that does exactly the same thing as a subscription as a service. It's a nine people, I think, employed by the two companies, 700 grand turnover, 300 grand of profit, so all well and good. Just a nice little fit bolt-on for a company that provides transport analytics, rail infrastructure, and traffic management. So if you go to a pop festival or a Formula One meeting or a big sports event, the chances are these guys have designed the traffic flow that helps, in theory, get you in and get you out without too much fuss. Yeah. So it's just a little bolt-on. They were looking for a bigger fish, I think, last year. Didn't get it. But, you know, these are three things that, again, a couple of things that just do seem to fit in quite nicely. I think the other big thing to watch out for is that I think in the spring of this year, they've got an earn-out coming up on a 2015 acquisition called OnTrack. So I guess the good news would be they have to pay the earn-out because it means the acquisition's panned out exactly as planned. Again, it's not the cheapest stock. It's on about 20 times earnings. The yield's not much to speak of, a third of a percent. But earnings growth has been consistent. It's a tech leader. There's high barriers to entry here. And again, it's just one of those that, you know, if you, in theory, you just tuck away, don't get too caught up in the short-term volatility. It's one that, in theory, should play out quite well in the end.
Lovely. Okay. Marvellous stuff. And the last, Russ, is
Blue Jay Mining, which is confirmed this morning. It's raising £17 million at 22 pence. That's, from my crude maths, 77 million new shares in issue. That's about 10% of the current float. Remember, this is a Greenland-based mineral sands miner, a big project called Pituffik, where in theory the scale is enormous and the high grades available on things like ilmenite, rutile and zircon are getting some geologists very excited, where all these things are used in paints and plastics where you need bright colours. And the company clearly feels it's making progress and is looking to raise some cash at 22p. There are some big challenges still with the project because it's dark and cold up there. They can only do the mining for 5 months a year. They're looking for Canadian shipping partners so they can get the stuff off the stockpile and get the stuff off the island. And then in terms of this year, you're looking for news on permitting, financing, operations ahead of maiden production in 2019. Now, we first looked at this stock at 13.5p middle of last year. It's now at 20-odd, 24.5 or something. Mm-hmm. So it's up 80%. So, frankly, now that they're knocking on the door asking for money, my inclination would be take some profit, sit back and wait and see what happens.
Yeah, it's definitely good momentum. Do you know, I remember chatting to Rod, who was the managing director of this company.
Yes.
When they were at, I've chatted to him loads of times, but I mean, the first time I chatted to him, they were down at just sub 2p.
Yeah.
And I remember him talking about the size of this, but it hadn't been officially sort of mapped out or resourced in any way. And I didn't know how to sort of quantify it in my head. And I was on the verge of sort of buying some, just thought, well, it sounds like he's got a massive resource, I don't really understand it, but I didn't, and I sort of regret that. It's one of those things that I didn't hit
again. These companies are the sort of thing that you either like or you don't, and you know, lots of small cap fund managers will say they never buy things that are still cash negative,
because
you know, if Blue Jay does hit the jackpot, then you know it's going to be so wildly profitable you can afford to miss the first 500% and still make 500%. Does that make sense? But equally, if it goes wrong, the thing turns into a cash sink. So in that respect, you know, it's a matter of what your risk appetite is. And clearly there's enormous potential here, but equally they probably will need an offtake partner at some stage because it is such a big project and it isn't a big company. It's got a market cap of, you know, going to have a market cap of a couple, you know, 100 and just a shy of 200 after the issue. So, you know, in that respect, it's a matter of what your risk appetite is in the end. And with an 80% profit coming into a placing where you might think be a bit of a pause for breath, it's up to you. You may want to take up your rights. You may want to sell some of your rights and cover a certain percentage contribution. So maybe you keep your percentage stay the same, or you may just think, I've had a jolly good run. There's lots of things that can happen this year that are good, but equally there could be delays. At the moment, you know, I'm a naturally kind of risk averse kind of guy anyway, up to a point I'd be inclined to take some profits and sit back and wait and see what happens.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. Marvellous, Russ. Well, have a nice weekend.
Have a fantastic weekend.
Having a swim and reading the paper, obviously not at the same time.
Not at the same time. I know that would be very tricky.
Yeah.
And have a lovely weekend yourself. We'll catch you soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Regal Petroleum, RPT. At four, Ferrum Crescent, FCR. Put them on your watch list, I would, Ferrum Crescent. I think they've got a... I've just been looking at that resource they've got. They did a maiden JORC resource, and it's big, and the market cap's only 3 million. So I think going forward, if they make some positive noises, it should move the market cap. Tiny market cap compared to what they have there. And I'll give you an example. They've got 670,000 tons of zinc. That's about $2.2 billion worth. So it's worth adding to your watch list. At three, Capita CPI. At two, Stella Diamonds, STEL. And we chatted to Carl earlier. And number one, at last, it's Upland Resources, UPL. We've been talking about this company for a year and a half, pretty much. And now they're finally going to get traction. I did one thing at one point. Are they ever going to get traction? But they have. I'm glad to see that, because Steve, the CEO, is a very nice guy. And he's got a good strategy there. Okay, at five, top five most like Darren S's is this, by the way. At Codal Minerals, Burgundy Project, new conventions license awarded. I like that. Yes, good to confirm that. I've written a blog on those. I do hold those. At four, Fast Forward Innovations, Investee Company Update, Vimo. At three, Upland Resources, successful completion of WIC environmental study. At two, STX Energy, spud of KSS2 well, Morocco. And number one, most liked RNS, was from Premier Africa Minerals, Zulu Drilling Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Hopefully it's a weekend podcast. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT Weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.